from inside the castle in Owings Mills, Maryland, it is the Banner Ravens podcast. Paul Mancano and Jonas Schaefer wrapping up the 2024 NFL draft. Jonas, we are here after six picks today. We have been here through entire generations. I mean, kingdoms have risen and fallen in the amount of time that we have been in this building. And you, during all that time, didn't have the ability to come up with a word of the day. So I had to come up with one for you.
Stationary. I don't know what it means. What does it mean, Paul?
Yeah, stationary. It's a tough word to find out. Standing still, not moving, is the dictionary.com definition. Language of origin, it's the Latin stationarius, which I would assume means stationary. That is for the Ravens' lack of movement on this final day of the draft. Staying and picking at all six spots after staying and picking at all three spots in the first 2 days of the draft. We're going to go through all six of the Ravens' day three picks. Jonas, were you surprised at all that the Ravens did not make a single trade during this entire weekend?
Yeah, I was. I thought we would see them try to move up. I thought we would see them try to move into 2025. You know, not especially deep drafts this year, because when you get to the seventh round and you are taking guys like Nick Samick and Sanusi Kang, guys who, despite being Big Ten guys, I personally have never heard of, doesn't mean that they're not good, doesn't mean they won't eventually become Hall of Fame players, but, you know, it's a little surprising that they weren't more active, but you got to make the best of what you're, you know, make the best of the hand that you're dealt. And the Ravens obviously felt pretty good about where they were, because otherwise they probably would have done a better job of moving around.
Yeah. Well, those guys were at the very end of the day. Let's go in chronological order here. Let's start with the pick of Devontez Walker, the wide receiver at 113th overall, 6'1", 193 pounds. Started at North Carolina Central in his first year, but didn't play there any games because of the 2020 season, which was canceled. 2021 and 2022 just got a lot quieter here, Jonas. Do you notice that? Mm-hmm. That is amazing how that happens. Played at Kent State and then eventually transferred to UNC, but he only played eight games there because of NCAA eligibility stuff that they were working out. All of that, he is happy to say, is behind him. Had 41 catches for almost 700 yards and seven touchdowns. Good size, good length. He is quick. He can take the top off of defense. Ran a 4.36 40-yard dash. He's really smooth. The thing that allowed him to be available for the Ravens in round four today is that maybe not the tightest of turns, maybe not the most polished route runner in this class, but caught a lot of passes from Drake May, who's obviously a top three pick in this draft. What did you see that you liked specifically about Devontez Walker when studying for this draft?
You know, he didn't have a great Senior Bowl. I think probably the expectation going into that was that he was going to be a second or third round pick because of that speed. But, you know, it seemed like this was kind of a tough year for him. And I think there's probably some upside in that fact. You know, not a lot of guys, his height, his weight, his speed are available on day three. So, you know, you wondered, would someone like, I'm blanking on the name, the Oregon wide receiver who fell.
Troy Franklin.
Yeah. Would he be available after the surprising fall that he had? Would a guy like Javon Baker, the UCF wide receiver, who mm-hmm. was a potential X receiver, be available? Both those guys went pretty quickly in round four, but I think probably the Ravens are happy to have a guy like that, considering they didn't make any wide receiver picks on day one, no wide receiver picks on day two. We know they needed to have more depth at that position. And so for the Ravens to have a, you know, let's say top four of Zay Flowers, Rashad Bateman, Nelson Aguilar, Devontez Walker, and then obviously you have quasi wide receivers in Mark Andrews, in Isaiah Likely. I think it's a nice wide receiver room. It's not going to set the world on fire, but it is solid. You have, you know, guys who are there probably for the long haul in, you know, Rashad Bateman being signed for the next couple of years, and Zay Flowers only entering year two. So, you know, it's a good spot.
Yeah, and I like it because he is somewhat more of a high upside play. You know, I think that they could have taken some lower ceiling shots at wide receiver later on in this draft, but they stayed and picked with with Devontae Walker and somebody who I think maybe has the ability to be a wide receiver two in the NFL. Maybe wide receiver one would be a little bit lofty, but if he's able to clean up a lot of his, you know, technique, a lot of his route running, and develop in this offense, I think that that gives him a higher ceiling. You know,
do you think he can make noise?
I think he can make quite a lot of noise. I don't know if we can make as much noise as the noise that we're hearing, but certainly he can turn some heads as our heads are turning.
Make a ruckus.
Yeah. So Jonas, I mean, I said at the onset of this draft that I would have liked to see the Ravens, maybe not in this draft, but maybe at some point over the coming months. No big wide receivers were also traded during this draft. We thought there was a chance maybe Cortland Sutton could be dealt. He wasn't traded at all this weekend. There is still time, obviously, before the season, but the Ravens were going to add to this wide receiver room. I just would have liked to see maybe somebody in the 1-2 range of wide receivers. Devontae Walker is going to come in, I think, pretty clearly as wide receiver 3 or 4 behind Zay Flowers, Rashad Bateman, and, you know, between Nelson Agholor and Devontae Walker. I think that's kind of a toss-up, but I think that the fact that he has some upside and maybe some juice yet to be squeezed is something that makes him attractive.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see just how quickly he comes along. I think, you know, if you guys haven't seen it, I would recommend checking out the video that he did, or the checking out the phone call that he had with Eric DaCosta. Obviously a very emotional moment for him and for his family. You know, like I said, it hasn't been the smoothest year for him. I think he probably expected when that North Carolina season started to be a top 60, top 90 pick. Didn't happen. But he comes into a nice spot in Baltimore. You know, the Ravens, he might be the fastest wide receiver in that room right now. Might have been the fastest receiver in that room last year. You know, Rashad Bateman, more of a 4-4 guy. Mm-hmm. Zay Flowers, quicker than he is fast, also a 4-4 guy. Obviously, Nelson Agholor, not really blowing anyone away with his speed at this point in his career. So I think, you know, there's a lot of interchangeability with those top three, top four guys. That's always been the MO for John Harbaugh. He doesn't really subscribe to the idea that you're an X, you're a Y, you're an F, you're a Z, all these, you know, alphabet soup positions that you may know, you may not know. But the Ravens like to have guys who can move around. I still think it's important to have a guy who can be that backside X, you know, run the isolated route downfield, mm-hmm. be able to separate on these kind of backside digs. Maybe it's Walker, maybe it's Bateman, maybe it's Zay. You know, you never know. But I think it is important that you have that guy who can be a ball winner downfield, whether it's contested catch situations or just being able to separate from that, you know, CB1 on another team.
And it is funny because as a member of the ACC, he went up against Nate Wiggins, mm-hmm. the Ravens' first round pick, and he was able to separate and was able to beat Nate Wiggins over the top. Wiggins, a guy who...
The only time all year.
Right. And Nate Wiggins, a guy who obviously known for his incredible speed and was beaten by Devontae Walker. So there is a good sign that maybe Walker has... some ability to take out a number one cornerback and to take that responsibility on and beat that guy. It's just a matter of his crispness in terms of his route running on a consistent basis. All right, so that was the fourth round pick for the Ravens at 113. Then they went and drafted cornerback TJ Tampa at 130 overall. Jonas, 6'1", 189 pounds, played 4 years at Iowa State. This is a guy that was being talked about by some as a second round pick. A guy that fell through this draft all the way to the fourth round. Why do you think he was available for the Ravens at that spot?
It's tough to say. I mean, you mentioned that the second round bona fides. Some people, you know, in mocks over the past couple of weeks, past couple of months, were mentioning him as a potential dark horse for the back end of that first round. So for the Ravens to get him, obviously the pro day was a little bit disappointing in terms of the 40. I think it was a 4.56. Mm-hmm. He wasn't able to run, I think, at his combine because I think he had a hamstring pull, something medical came up. Wasn't able to really ball out the way that he was. But again, like, he fits the prototype in a lot of ways for what the Ravens look for in those cornerbacks. You know, he is big. Mm-hmm. He is long. I think 89th percentile wingspan. He's able to get up. I think people say
very physical.
Yeah. You look at the highlights, it's a lot of him, you know, getting hands on balls, getting picks, bothering folks at the line of scrimmage. So I think considering the kind of guy he is, I believe he was active on special teams as well. all these traits that just, I'm sure, spoke to John Harbaugh in a very deeply spiritual way. He's exactly the kind of guy that you want to get in the building. And, you know, we don't know if Pepe Williams is going to be able to, you know, finally kind of overcome that injury bug. We don't know what Jalen Armour Davis might have to do. Although, good sign for him that, you know, considering his concussion history, for the Raven, for the NFL to give these guys the clearance to go ahead and win, wear the Guardian cap.
Yeah.
You know, it could be an unexpected boon for him and finally get on the field and finally playing more than he has over these first 2 years. But I think the Ravens did a smart thing over the first three days of this draft, get some cornerback depth. That is always a position that they kind of burn through. And why not get two guys who might have been, you know, two of the best players at the position in general?
Yeah, and at the Liars luncheon a month ago, John Harbaugh, or Eric DaCosta, I should say, was talking about the importance of having depth at that cornerback spot. That's part of the reason they were able to overcome the loss of Marlon Humphrey for significant portions of the season last year, is because they were able to build up that secondary, even losses at the safety spot. Obviously, Geno Stone was a big part of that, and the Ravens added a safety later on in this draft, and they're hoping maybe during the undrafted free agent period over the next couple hours that they will add more of those guys. But yeah, I mean, cornerback depth is going to be hugely important for this team. They brought back Arthur Mollett, obviously, but there's no guarantee he repeats the season that he had last year, which was phenomenal, maybe the best year of his career, you could say, or at least the best year in a while. So there's no guarantee that he steps up. TJ Tampa is fun to watch on tape. I mean, he is very physical, like you said. He is flying to the ball. He made one hit in his tape against, I think, Ohio University that just will knock the wind out of you just watching the hit itself, ripping the ball away. Very physical. The terms plays like a Raven and the terms didn't think that guy was going to be there get bandied about a lot in this facility or on draft weekend. But I think both of those terms could apply to TJ Tampa.
Yeah, and the unexpected benefit of this Ravens roster, a lot of guys with last names that are also NFL teams. You got TJ Tampa.
Yeah.
You got Ben Cleland.
True.
You got a couple Washingtons, Roderick.
Yeah.
Or Darius. So yeah, watch out for that. I mean, if the Ravens make any moves in free agency, maybe there's a Seattle to, or maybe there's a Seattle to bring in. Maybe there's
I don't know.
Maybe there's a Cincinnati. I don't know. Just something to watch out. The Ravens have a type is all I want to say.
Sure. San Francisco. If you know anybody with the last
name, San Francisco. Yeah.
Kansas City. Tommy Kansas City.
Fantastic name. Fantastic name.
All right. Keeping the drain rolling here, because we got a lot of picks to run through. Jonas, let's talk about Marshall Ali. Marshall running back Rasheen Ali. I screwed up his name the first time when we were discussing him. I called him Rasheed. It's Rasheen Ali, Jonas. I did like this guy on tape. I will go ahead and say that. You know me. I'm a perfect scout. I've never been wrong about any prospect ever. And I've spent years coaching the position of running back. None of those things are correct. He spent 4 years at Marshall. Started three games in 2022, but then 12 in 2023, and had a phenomenal year statistically. 212 carries for 1,135 yards, 5.4 yards per carry, 15 rushing touchdowns, 28 catches to go with 213 receiving yards and a receiving touchdown in those 12 games. So the statistics are phenomenal. I know he's playing at Marshall, but the tape is also very fun. He does a little bit of everything, catches a lot of passes out of the backfield. I'd say he's much more physical for a guy who's 5'11 than you might expect. And running back, Jonas, I know you didn't want to see a running back on day one or day two. Your fears were assuaged. You were fine there. So they waited a while to take the running back, but I thought it was important that they leave this weekend with a running back. And I'm glad that they got a guy that I seem to like on tape.
Yeah. Fun highlight package. I think I say this knowing that, you know, it's apples to oranges. It's important, I think, that he, you know, comes from a system where there's a lot of read option stuff. There's a lot of shotgun-based run game, which should help his transition. I also made that same comment about Tyler Bede a couple years ago. Did not really help him see the field here in Baltimore. But again, you would much rather him have that experience with the mesh point, with the, you know, handoffs from the shotgun. He gets to full speed pretty quickly, which I think is important in this Ravens offense. You know, you have that familiarity. You will make the most of those you know, openings that you get in this running offense. Don't expect him to play a huge amount of snaps next year. He, you know, if any, really, just because of that depth, because Derrick Henry is going to be getting a lot of touches. Justice Hill is always, you know, going to be there established, but it's a nice, you know, dice roll in the, you know, fourth or fifth round, wherever they took him.
Well, we've talked about how John Harbaugh doesn't use a whole lot of his rookie running backs a whole lot,
yep,
especially early in the season and midway through last season. Keaton Mitchell obviously missed the first several games of the season, started the season on IR,
yep,
and didn't return until week five, I believe, is when he came back. And then we start to see the more play calls that involved Keaton Mitchell. And unfortunately, the injury ended his season prematurely. It's interesting, though, because this might have to be a reverse case because Keaton Mitchell won't be back, we assume, until midway through the season at least. So do you think there's a chance that the Ravens trust Rasheen Ali early in the season just because they won't have the only guy behind right now that we have penciled in behind Derrick Henry other than Rasheen Ali would be Justice Hill?
Well, I think it just comes down to fumbles. You know, John Harbaugh is not going to play you if you muff punts on special teams or if you give up the rock as a runner. It's as simple as that. So, you know, you would hope that coming into Baltimore with a new level of coaching, a new level of instruction, then that is something that you can potentially nip in the bud. Fumbles and ball security, it's an issue, but it's not really something that I think is all that consistent from year to year. So
yeah,
you can be a relatively secure ball carrier 1 year, not so the next year. So maybe there is some regression in play here that, you know, he comes into camp next year and just doesn't cough up the rock. And that would be a good thing for his chances in terms of getting onto the field. I still think with Derrick Henry, with Justice Hill, with Lamar Jackson, and with his offense being more pass heavy than I think people give it credit for, you know, they were like 10th in the NFL in early down pass rate. I know people still think of this offense as being run first.
Yep.
That wasn't really the case last year. So it's a little bit tougher to imagine a significant role for a guy like Rasheen Ali when, you know, you mentioned the Keaton Mitchell workload. Last year, he didn't have a game with more than 9 carries. And that was with him, you know, having what, 8.4 yards per carry.
Yeah.
So
talk about turnover issues. We talk about Rasheen Ali fumbling the ball too many times, 11 fumbles last year. How about Devin Leary?
What a transition, Paul.
Was their sixth round pick, Kentucky quarterback, 6'1", 215. This pick was surprising for both of us in a lot of ways, particularly because Tulane's Michael Pratt was still on the board when that pick was handed in. Pratt is bigger. He is, I believe, younger. He has been playing for fewer years in college. And in my mind, I thought he was the better prospect, put up better numbers in his final collegiate season than Devin Leary did. What concerns me the most about Devin Leary is that his final collegiate season was a whole lot worse than the season he had in 2021 and probably worse than the season he had in 2022. It was his only year at Kentucky, and he was kind of expected to take a jump, and he had built up some kind of, you know, draft hype, some built up his draft stock,
yep,
in his first couple years at NC State. Then he transfers to Kentucky and completes only 56% of his passes, throws for 2,700 yards, 25 touchdowns, and 12 interceptions in 13 games. So the interceptions were an issue, and the low completion percentage for a college quarterback, I mean, 56% would be low in the NFL,
yep,
but college systems typically produce higher completion percentages than NFL teams. How concerned would you be about the low completion percentage and the high number of turnovers?
Pretty concerned. I think you want to give a little bit of leeway because it is his first year in the system.
Sure.
But it's also,
but it's his fifth season.
I know. It's also a Liam Cohen offense. And that is a guy who had experience in the NFL, is obviously back now in the NFL with Tampa Bay as their OC. You know, I saw a little bit of chatter online that low completion percentage is partly because there were some drops from Kentucky wide receivers. But still, you know, I checked on Sports Info Solutions, just kind of curious for what his on-target percentage was in the SEC. It was near the bottom of the NFL. I mean, it was like below Jalen Milroe, maybe like 13th out of 14 qualifying quarterbacks. So that is how well are you putting the ball on your wide receivers?
And yeah,
he wasn't doing a good job of it. Obviously, you know, the expectation was that he was going to get drafted because he does have arm talent. He can put the ball, you know, wherever it needs to be, at least in terms of just getting the ball to a certain point, not necessarily accurately. And it's going to be on T. Martin. It's going to be on this coaching staff. It's going to be on, you know, even Lamar to help, you know, usher this guy to a point where maybe just another year of, you know, growth and maturity is what kind of cures him. You know, obviously you mentioned the age. I think he came into college football 3 years after Lamar, and he is only now getting to be teammates with Lamar. So maybe not as much growth potential there as you would have liked. Maybe, you know, that's why the Michael Pratt thing, I think, was probably a better option for right. for us personally. But arm talent is arm talent, and you're going to see teams take rolls of the dice. You know, Joe Milton going ahead of both of these guys.
Yeah.
Not because he's accurate, but because he can throw the ball over the mountains.
Yeah, and it's not like we were talking about taking Michael Pratt in like the fourth round. He's really slipped through the cracks. He wasn't taken until the seventh round.
Yeah.
So if you're taking that kind of gamble as a sixth, seventh round pick, I'm not going to pretend like I can evaluate quarterbacks better than people who are paid to do so. But just given the information that we have at hand, I thought that Devin Leary was not as good a prospect as Michael Pratt.
And it is interesting. Again, it's small sample size, but it is interesting that, you know, with the Ravens having their druthers, they have in the past, couple months now said, we do not prioritize mobility at that backup quarterback spot as much as maybe I thought they should or would. You know, Tyler Huntley, not, you know, Lamar Jackson out there, but he's a guy who can create that second play. Josh Johnson is pretty statuesque. Devin Leary is pretty statuesque. He had a great highlight of him kind of making something out of nothing, but for the most part, he was not involved in the college run game.
No.
So again, maybe he kind of washes out in a year and the Ravens have to reset that QB2 battle and they get a guy late in the draft with one of their projected 11 picks in next year's draft. And we are having a different discussion about what they value at that backup quarterback spot. But it is a pretty stark dichotomy of having Lamar, the most mobile quarterback in the NFL, and a bunch of guys, aside from Malik Cunningham, who really cannot do a whole lot with that improvisational ability.
And John Harbaugh did say that Josh Johnson right now is still a QB2, but look, it's April. A lot can change, and what he says right now, we can't hold him to in week one. I'm sure he has to give right now the lip service to Josh Johnson, who is the veteran, and they were able to convince to re-sign in Baltimore and say, yeah, he has the advantage over somebody we just took in the sixth round, but this is the kind of low-stakes gamble that the Ravens have been used to taking at quarterback. Obviously, Tyler Huntley was undrafted. You just have to be prepared. Sixth-round picks at any position. Same with seventh-round picks and, you know, to a lesser extent, fifth-round picks often don't make the team in week one. They're often practice squad guys, and they also might get claimed by other teams. If Devin Leary doesn't work out and he is, as you would say, Jonas, a flagrant disaster in training camp and during the preseason, you know, they're going to have to turn to Josh Johnson unless they sign one of these other guys off the street in the next coming months, unless they go and get Ryan Tannehill. He's the guy I keep using because he's the biggest name left out on the market. But, you know, this is a low stakes gamble and you just have to be prepared to, you know, take a loss if he turns out to be nothing.
Yeah. I don't know why I've been using flagrant disaster when tire fire is so much more evocative and fun to say.
And it's a rhyming term.
Tire fire.
Yeah. All right. So Devin Leary was their sixth round pick. All right. Two seventh round picks, Jonas.
Tell me what you know about
Nick Samek
and Sanusi Kane.
I can tell you more about Nick Samek, who's the center from Michigan State, because he actually was at the combine. And whereas Sanusi Kane from Purdue, the safety, was not at the combine, and rare, as John Harbaugh said, that they took a non-combine guy. Samek, we should start with, probably comes in with a chance to be backup for Tyler Linderbaum at center because Sam Mustipher signed with Denver this offseason. The book on Samek is that good against the run, not as good against the pass, not as good in pass protection. He's 6'4", 307 pounds. Maybe struggles with some overpowering defensive linemen. But I would think that he has an opportunity here to come in and be the backup potentially for Tyler Linderbaum.
Right. With Sam Mustipher gone, that job is his to have if he can win it.
Right.
Eric Galco.
Seventh round pick, though.
Yeah. Eric Galco, who is involved with the Shrine Bowl, one of their chief decision makers, tweeted after the Ravens took Samek that, if not for injury late in the season, obviously he had a broken fibula, I think, in November. he might have been a top 100 type of pick. So perhaps an arbitrage play for the Ravens, the same way that they got Andrew Voorhees at a relatively cheap price, considering where he had been in the pre-draft process before he had the ACL injury. Obviously, Eric Galco is has his own self-interest. You know, you want to hype up these guys who were in the Shrine Bowl. I believe, Nick Samick was involved with the Shrine Bowl, was invited, perhaps even an attendee there. So that there is definitely, take it with a little bit of a grain of salt. But still, that the tape is what it is. And the fact that he went seventh round drafted despite not having played all of last year and perhaps having some medical concerns, why not take a chance on a guy like that when you needed to take at least two offensive line? That was the bare minimum threshold, I think, considering the state of this offensive line.
We set the over under at between, I said I would more likely put it at 3.5 than 2.5, and they hit the under. You said you thought it was likely they'd end up taking three, and they ended up with two.
Yeah.
So they didn't.
Because we didn't expect them to take a quarterback.
We did not expect. Well, yeah. Although I thought it was a possibility, but we both did predict that they would not take a quarterback, but they weren't able to address the guard position at all in this draft. And they're hoping maybe that they can go out and sign an undrafted free agent, I think.
Yeah. I wonder if any of that is tied into the calculus on them thinking realistically that Rosengarten could be a guy that you put in there as an emergency.
Right. True. But it is something that, sometimes teams, as they get down to the sixth and seventh round, they like some guys that are slipping through the cracks, and they say, we'd rather just make the case to an undrafted free agent that, hey, you get to come in and compete for this job in week one. You have a great opportunity here. Then just go ahead and draft somebody that they're not crazy about at that position. Right. Finally, the Ravens' ninth and final pick of this draft. That would be Purdue safety Sanusi Kane in the seventh round. Senior, 6 foot, 215 pounds. Jonas, what can you tell us about Sanusi Kane? I'm just going to toss this to you. Make you do all the work.
Not a lot, Paul.
Terrific. That does it for our show today.
He's from Harlem. We know that. we know he was.
We know his name is Sanusi Kane.
Special teamer.
And we know he went to Purdue.
Productive last 2 years, 73 tackles in 2022, 79 in 2023. He's about where Geno Stone was in his range. Geno Stone was a lot more highly commented upon by PFF when the Ravens took him. So I think there's a little bit more of a track record with Geno than there is with our dear bud Sanusi, who we will get to know over these next couple of years. But if you're taking DBs at this level, you are hoping that they can contribute on special teams. That's just what it is. And obviously the Ravens know about where he probably fares competitively, athletically. Not a lot of information because he was a non-combine guy, but just in general, kind of interesting that, again, the only pick of the Ravens nine selections who was not from the Power Five was Rasheen Ali, who obviously was an anomaly in a lot of ways, leading the FBS a couple of years ago in touchdowns. So the Ravens continue to bank on these big school Power Five guys. They want that level of competition on the track record. They want that level of competition on the highlight reel. And, even though we don't know a lot about Sanusi Kane, there is at least certain benchmarks that he is hitting that makes him a viable prospect for the Ravens.
Right. So that does it for the Ravens 2024 NFL draft. And we will have complete coverage of all the undrafted free agents as well on the BaltimoreBanner.com, where you can subscribe $1 for 6 months. Jonas, to put a bow on things, the nine members of the draft class: cornerback Nate Wiggins, offensive tackle Roger Rosengarten, outside linebacker Adisa Isaac, wide receiver Devontae Walker, cornerback TJ Tampa, running back Rasheen Ali, quarterback Devin Leary, center Nick Samick, and safety Sanusi Kane.
What's your grade?
My grade for this draft is an A-, because Rasheen Ali's my guy, and it's only a minus because Devin Leary's not my guy.
Yeah, I would say B+. Again, it's really tough to quibble with literally with anything they did.
Yeah.
Selfishly, it would have been cool to see them bring in a local with one of those last picks. Bo Braid. God love him. The Maryland safety from just down the road in River Hill, or Columbia, played at River Hill, did not get drafted despite being kind of consensus fourth or fifth round guy.
Did Frank Gore Jr. get drafted?
No, I think he was signed as an undrafted free agent. Curtis Jacobs, who I believe is from went to McDonough from Owings Mills, another Penn State guy, did not get drafted. Had him as a potential late round linebacker who with special teams ability also went undrafted. So, you know, again, I think they hit pretty much all the target areas that they needed to. I can't really see too much areas for complaint. You know, you got your potential playmaker wide receiver, you got your potential impact edge rusher, you definitely got an offensive lineman who can come in and compete for a job year one. Maybe there would have been some frustration with not, you know, rolling the dice on a guy like Christian Mahogany, who went, you know, later than
you
we
were,
expected.
Yeah, him. You were banging the table
just
for that guy.
Again, he's a good run blocker. Maybe there are some medicals that explain his fall. But the Ravens know their roster better than us. They know how, you know, Ben Cleveland is faring. They know how Andrew Voorhees is faring. And if they see those guys as being much closer to a starting gig than any of these day three guys, then more power to them.
Absolutely. We will have a kind of 10,000 foot view of this draft class in a couple days. I think we're looking at Tuesday for our next podcast, by the way, on the Banner Ravens podcast. Like, review, rate, subscribe. Give us 5 stars. Write us a good review. If you write us a good review, we'll read it out here on the show. Jonas, to borrow a term from you, I think we could say that this final episode was a flagrant disaster, given the fact that the stand broke halfway through
nice.
The show and fell all the way down, and the vast amount of items moving back and forth in our background, too.
Rules of the game. All is fair in love and podcasting.
Yeah, this is true. We are guests here. At @Jonas_Schaefer is his Twitter handle. I'm at Paul Mancano. Thanks so much for tuning in, and subscribe to the Baltimore Banner to get continued coverage from Jonas Schaefer, Gianna Han, and Kyle Goon. We'll catch you next time. For Jonas, I'm Paul. Have a good night, everybody.